Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
This is Rebecca Turner, and thank you for listening to the Good Things Podcast here on Super Talk Mississippi.
It's Mississippi's Radio Happy Hour.
Well, I'm going to Mississippi. Mississippi, here I come.
You're listening to Good Things with Rebecca Turner.
Well, I'm going to Mississippi. Mississippi, here I come.
Bringing you the good stories of Mississippi's people, places, and things to do. Now, here's Rebecca.
Good afternoon, Super Talk Mississippi. You're tuned into your radio happy hour. That's the Good Things. I'm your host, Rebecca Turner. Now, don't forget, you can listen to Good Things. We are streaming live over at supertalk.fm. We're also streaming from that Super Talk Mississippi app. We're always, too, on that local Super Talk Mississippi radio station. But don't forget, you can watch us. We are on your computer, your mobile device. Just head on over to Super Talk TV. You know by now, here on Good Things, we like to raise awareness on becoming a living donor. And today, we've got a heartwarming story of how it all went right at home. So joining us is Miss Ronnie Hayes. She is the daughter to Stephanie Hayes, and she became her mom's living donor over 5 years ago now. So welcome to you both.
Thank you. Nice to meet you.
So I'd have to ask, I guess it starts with Stephanie, how this sort of your journey all began. Obviously, there was an issue where you needed an organ or a kidney, but take us back to obviously prior to 5 years ago. Okay. What was your health journey like?
I was a perfectly healthy female. And on November 11th, we were installing a new electronic health record at the facility that I work at. Working a lot of hours, I thought I was tired. I was exhausted. Mm-hmm. I felt exhausted. A little bit of a cough. And so took a few days off, went to a walk-in clinic, and they said, well, we think you have pneumonia and a sinus infection, gave me some meds, sent me on my way. 2 days later, I still didn't feel very well. So I went back, and they're like, well, you sound better. Your blood pressure is a little bit high. And so I sent me back home, and then 3 days later, I had such shortness of breath, I couldn't even walk up the stairs. So I went to another walk-in clinic, and my blood pressure was sky high, and they did a chest x-ray, and lungs were filled with fluid, and they said you have to go to the emergency room. And so went over to the emergency room, had some labs done, and there's tests that they do for kidney function. Mm-hmm. And mine were really out of whack. Normal high is like 1.4. I was 14.6.
I would say that's a little high.
Yeah, it's very high. And I was walking around. So I was diagnosed after a kidney biopsy and lab work with Good Pastures disease. And it's very rare. It's about 1 in 1 million people. They don't really know for sure what the cause is. So they typically say smoking, never smoked. Then they'll say fluorocarbons. Nope, not around fluorocarbons. Pesticides, nope, not really around those. And then the last guess is a virus. So they said it must have been a virus. I immediately went on renal dialysis. I had to go through something called plasmapheresis for 5 days. It's similar to dialysis, but they put you on a machine and they run all your blood through it, separate the clear part, the plasma from mm-hmm. it, and throw it away, because that's what contains the antibodies that cause this disease. So that's the fastest way for them to get rid of them. So I did home dialysis for 18 months. I had to be on a chemotherapy oral drug, Cytoxan, as well as very high-dose steroids. For 6 months, I had lab tests done every month. They would not put me on the list or even evaluate me until I had no antibodies left in my system.
I was just going to ask what yep. took that so long.
Yes.
So, oh gosh, Miss Stephanie, so this all happened within like a week? Where you went in from shortness of breath mm-hmm. to now you have this unfortunate Good Pastures disease, like your life mm-hmm. flipped and you're on dialysis.
Yep.
That's crazy.
It was very fast. It happened quick.
Would you have had to have had Good Pastures for a while and it was kind of incubating, or is it something that when it starts and hits, mm-hmm. it just starts to hit?
Something triggered it. Mm. And the only, I was like, well, I've been outside for 2 months, you know, doing flower work, that sort of thing. Never smoked in my entire life. So it was just, they figured it was a virus of some sort that I had that triggered it. And when the Good Pastures is triggered, your immune system goes absolutely crazy. Similar to, they call it the cytokine storm, something that the COVID patients went through. And so your inflammatory markers just go off the wall, super duper high. So I was at a local hospital, and then when they decided I had good pastures, the plasmapheresis couldn't be done there, so then I was sent to Vanderbilt. Stayed at Vanderbilt, went through the, I had to do renal dialysis. Then I had what we call a peritoneal catheter inserted into my stomach, and that was for dialysis once I got home. But I had the, you know, the big catheters out of your neck, you know, hooked up to dialysis, went through plasmapheresis, and then my clotting factors started to mess up. So as Ronnie said, you were kind of...
I think they need to change the name from good pastures to bad pastures. I just don't think that's well...
It's named after Dr. Goodpasture, who studied at Vanderbilt and was studying the 1916 flu. And there were very similar symptoms and organ failures with this as there was with the flu. So that's why it's named Good Pasture, because of him. I called it Cow Pasture.
Okay, I was like, there has to be a better...
A load of, you know what I mean.
Exactly.
But it was quite an experience. I mean, I knew I was sick. Mm-hmm. I started getting confusion because the toxins, because the kidneys couldn't clear them. I was getting, you know, confused. Sometimes people would say things I wouldn't remember it, or I'd say really off-the-wall strange things. I heard I was quite entertaining.
Ronnie, as the daughter, all this is happening so fast. I mean, you have a healthy mom. By this time, you're a little more grown. You're mm-hmm. in school, or, you know, at least you're not a child this way. But still, that's your mom. What's it like for the family watching, you know, the one that's usually the strongest head of the house going down so quickly?
Mm-hmm. So I was at Mississippi State when this happened, and she was back in Nashville. I think my sister had texted me and was like, "Mom's going to the ER." And I was like, "What? I'm 4.5 hours away. What's going on?" And so I think she was like, "Everything's okay right now." I think I went home early the next morning. And honestly, all of it is kind of a blur, just the timeline. And I was like, "Mom, I hope you've got these dates right, because that was a blur." But it was so hard with all the unknowns at first, because we were like, is mom going to be okay? Is mom going to make it? And I have two older sisters, so we kind of were going through all that together. Switching hospitals was scary. Talking to all these doctors was scary. I remember when she had gotten to the ICU at Vanderbilt, like we had family from Michigan come, and this teaching team came into the hospital and was like, "Hey, do you care if we bring all these students in here? Your mom is a really interesting case."
And I thanks. Was
like, "All right, let's do it."
Like, thanks. Yeah. I don't know, but sure.
Yeah.
You never really want to be that person. Although you at least get all the eyes and the, you know, people are sort of mm-hmm. interested in getting you to that point. So the point was, Stephanie, they had to get all of the, I guess, the antibodies, as you mentioned, it out. So then, was there hope that maybe if you got the antibodies out from the good pastures or however, that it would, if it's a virus, that it would pass and your kidneys would have been left better? Or did
never.
You know from the beginning it was going to be shot?
I'm a nurse also. And I knew from the very beginning when we talked with the nephrologist that it was only going to be dialysis and getting me ready for a transplant. The little, I'm going to call it a membrane in the kidney that lets the bad stuff out, you know, when you go to the restroom, and keeps the proteins and the good things in, was like Swiss cheese. It was just, the antibodies just went after it. So all the protein was flowing, you know, out of my body. But no, we knew at that point that's what we're going to have to do. And
I heard 18 months. How long were you on dialysis prior to getting the green light that you no more antibodies you could foresee for us?
Let's see, this happened in November. I had to be 6 months free. Because I got tested in October, the following, what was it?
2 years or so?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, I did home dialysis. I did peritoneal dialysis. And personally, it worked for me. I went to work every day. I did not miss a day of work. And basically, every night you hook up to the machine, and it fills you with the fluid that the doctors calculate that you need. It stays, what we call dwell, in your belly or your peritoneal cavity for a while. And then the machine pulls it back out. So it's kind of like a washer, you know, in and out throughout the night. And then you disconnect in the morning, cap off, shower, go to work.
And repeat the process.
Yeah.
What was it like getting the call? Like, okay, Stephanie, Miss Hay, you can now get on the list. We can move forward with finding a kidney. Do you remember that day?
Yep. It was very, very, very exciting. So I was like, finally, you know, just finally, I'm going to hopefully have a more normal life. I will say with peritoneal dialysis, if you want a normal life, if you can do it at home, do it at home versus the hemodialysis. I know some people can't because there's a lot of stuff that gets delivered every month at your home to, you know, for you to do it yourself. We trained Ronnie on how to hook up. My husband knew how to hook up because when I first went home from the hospital, I still wasn't playing with a full deck.
Right.
You know, and so they kind of hooked me up every night and, you know.
And they also hooked you up. One of them hooked you up with a kidney.
Yes.
So we'll get to that and more coming up next here on Good Things.
I was very excited.
At Keegan,
upbeat, positive, and stories that make you smile. This is Good Things with Rebecca Turner on Super Talk Mississippi, the Super Talk app, and at supertalk.fm.
Welcome back to Good Things. We are streaming live over at supertalk.fm. We're also streaming from that Supertalk Mississippi app. Hope you downloaded that. You can always find us too on that local Supertalk Mississippi radio station. But don't forget to watch us. We are on your computer, your mobile device. Just head on over to Supertalk TV. You'll see I'm not alone in the studio. We're continuing our conversation with Stephanie and Ronnie Hayes. Stephanie is mom, Ronnie is daughter. And she just walked us through her journey of literally within a week going from a healthy, you know, human to one that's on dialysis. Took you about 2 years, but you finally got the green light, Stephanie, that you could be put on the transplant list. Did you think that you were going to go through the transplant process via the list, or did you automatically start seeking potential living donors from those that you knew?
I never sought donors. My daughters sought donors. They put, you know, messages, cute ones on Instagram and
Facebook. Ronnie, hey, my mom needs a kidney.
Yeah, basically. My mom, I think
well,
it was my
at first,
yep.
When they were like, her best option is to be a living donor, my oldest sister and I were like, all right, how do we get started? What do we need to do? And so once we kind of got the green light, or she got the green light to be approved, my oldest sister had more, I guess, free time to donate. I was still in college. I was graduating. Hold on. Let me get my dates right. So when did you get approved to receive it?
I thought we said October.
October.
And then Lauren got started testing right away.
Yeah. So my oldest sister started testing right away because I was graduating that May, and then I was going to graduate school in July. So I had just not enough time.
Yeah.
And so my oldest sister started the process. Unfortunately, one of her levels wasn't where they wanted it
because
to
they
be.
Really test you.
Yes.
I mean, it's like, not like a, hey, I got one spare one, you can take it. Yeah. They almost try, from what I've heard over the years on Good Things talking about living donors, they almost try to find a reason for you not to be. Like, they look so hard for, like, you know, instead of just saying, we'll just take you, come on in, it's like they really want to make sure they should.
Right.
Most do. Make sure every T is crossed, I is dotted, that you are a legit, perfect candidate.
And she was, like, a great match, but there was just one level, which was still okay for her, but they were like,
they didn't want to jeopardize her.
Right.
You know, that was their intent.
They ultimately declined her as a donor. And then at this point, it was the end of January. And I was like, okay, I know it's going to take a couple months to get things rolling. Let's get started now. So I was like, I don't know, almost a perfect match. And then I kept getting my blood work done. And So that was end of January. They called me on April 15th, which is her birthday, and they're like, hey, you're approved to be her donor. And I was like, great, let's schedule a surgery. I got a good grad school. Let's get moving. And so I told her on her birthday dinner, or at her birthday dinner, that I was her match. And
did you know she was going? Did you know they were doing this?
Oh, I knew it. And I had a very difficult time with it as a mother.
Yeah.
They've got their lives as a mother, okay? Mm-hmm. Not as a clinician or anything. They have their young lives ahead of them. You know, and I'm at the time, I'm 60. I was sick at 58. And I'm like, and they're my children. You know, and I'm like, no, I don't. No, you can't. You can't. We'll just, you know, look and see if they can find matches. And my nephrologist basically scolded me. And he said, would you give away a Christmas present that your children had given you? And I said, well, of course not. And he said, then you have your answer. And I'm like, well, it's not exactly the same thing.
I was thinking the same thing, but I was going to let you use your analogy. Yeah.
So then my neighbor, who had donated a kidney to her husband, said to me, Steph, do not take away their joy.
And their opportunity to do that. Because, Ronnie, obviously, if you made it through all this time, you had made up your mind this is something you wanted to do.
Oh, yeah.
Because if it's something you didn't want to do, you'd probably been continuing to post on Facebook and trying to solicit.
Somebody give her a kidney.
Solicit kidneys. But it's good to say, just because you are a daughter, but you just shared a story, Stephanie, of a wife who obviously is not related. It's not necessarily relation that matters. I mean, it's just luck of the draw, really, from what I can tell. Anybody could be a match to anybody, or anybody could not be a match to anybody in that way.
Yeah, typically your children, you know, are half and half, Dad, but these two have more of mama.
Have more of mama. Why was it that you were more likely to get a kidney out of a living donor, Stephanie? Was it just because it was a better opportunity to find somebody, or was it just the list is so long you may have had to wait?
Oh, it was definitely quicker because the girls immediately were like, we're doing this, Mom. You know, as much as I said, don't do it, they were like, no. And it could have been quicker had I been a normal, or not normal, but a patient who had maybe kidney disease due to diabetes or blood vessel disease, I wouldn't have had to go that extra 6 months, you know, before I could be put on the list with the antibodies gone. So it was a little bit longer journey for me. But the weird thing is, I never went down that dark hole through this whole process. It was, I don't know, I had sense of humor. You know, I'd have to do a manual empty of my dialysis at work during the midday. So I'd shut my door at lunchtime and, you know, hang the bag and do whatever I had to do. Then you drain it back out and I'd get my scissors. I walk across the hall and our administrative assistant was right there. I'm like, hi, Tammy, I got to go to the bathroom. And we just both laugh about it, you know, because it was just, that was a routine.
Mm-hmm. How long was it from green light to surgery?
Green light was April 15th, and we had surgery May 28th.
Okay, so that was pretty quick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then what was that like experience like for you, Ronnie? Because now this is when it's kind of nervous for the one who hadn't gone through it or sort of needed it. So what was it like for you?
I think, so I was never nervous about donating it. And I would just, having to see her do peritoneal dialysis every night and like be hooked up to this machine for 8-9 hours, and you have better quality of life, I would say, than people doing hemodialysis, because you can have your normal routine, but like, she's still hooked up to this machine and she has to be there and has to do this. You can't miss a day, whatever. And so seeing some of her quality of life taken from her, I was like, okay, let's get this going. This is like, the stars are aligning, it's perfect timing. And I don't know, I was never nervous about it. I felt like it's kind of a routine surgery, and I trusted all the doctors, and it was a thorough process. They answered any questions I had.
How has your life changed? Because your mom was worried about you being younger. Yeah. How has your life changed, if at all, after you recovered?
It hasn't. I will say, I think my biggest concern before I donated, it was right when I had started working out and doing CrossFit, and I was like, you know, when you first start something, you see all the changes and you're locked in. And I was like, I'm going to lose everything I ever had, everything I've gained. And then I found this group on Facebook of kidney donor athletes. And we all connected, asked questions, talked to people who had donated previously, asked about their recovery and all that. And I mean,
there's a whole community out there.
It's a whole community. And it was great to, like, because, you know, some doctors may not be super familiar with kidney donors that are athletes, you know?
And active, and then you can come in and be your own advocate sort of that way in this. You know, Stephanie, being a nurse, being a mom, you know, knowing all the things, being your own health advocate, like, what is your sort of, I guess, message to just everyone about it all? Like, in terms of living donors, don't be scared, you know, take it, but also being the own advocate for your own health care.
I think for the living donors, what folks need to realize is when you're evaluated for a transplant, me as the recipient, I have my separate team of doctors and separate committee that meets, and the same for the donor. So there's no, when do I say, favoritism, or there's no, they don't know. Like, they may know that she wants to donate to a parent. They don't know who that is. So I think for donors, that's just they're very much your advocate as a donor. They will not do anything to move forward if they feel, you know, it's going to harm you. I'm very much an advocate for living donors. I mean, I watch her, you know, she went on to grad school. She's competing in donor games. You know, Amazingly, I'm 65 now. I have my quarterly labs done, right? My kidney levels are those of a normal person. Typically, after donation, the recipients don't have a low, you know, it's, mine's like perfect. Now, she does have two arteries in her kidneys, so maybe that helps a little bit. I don't know, but she was unique in that manner.
What would you say to people on the fence about being a living donor, or if ever met with that opportunity to do what?
I would say slowing down your life for a couple months to recover pales in comparison to the quality of life someone will gain from getting a kidney.
Well, I love it. Thank you both for sharing your story. I think it's wonderful. Such a beautiful love story between mom and daughter.
Yep.
But it doesn't have to be that way. You can be a living donor to a stranger, right? So if you see the ad on Facebook, take it. All right, stick with us. We got more for you coming up next. He's gone country. New kind of talk, he's gone country. Look at them boots, he's gone country. Oh, back to his roots, he's gone country. He's gone country. Everybody's gone country.
Rebecca Turner.
She looks healthy and sane.
Good Things with Rebecca Turner continues on Super Talk Mississippi.
Don't know the name of the movie, but it's the biker one with the Elvis guy.
Yes.
See?
You got half of it.
I got half of it? It's not a biker movie, though.
No, it is, but bike riders.
Oh, bike riders.
Yeah.
I think you're saying I got half of the name, but it is the dude that played Elvis, right?
Yes, Austin Butler.
Got it. Look at me. Good job, Will. How many times did it take Rhino not being here on a Friday for you to get scolded to finally?
15th time's a charm.
So, Tanya, have you gotten a chance to see Bike Riders?
Yes, I actually saw it last night, and I took my husband with me, so I have a male perspective and the female perspective to share. But yeah, so this movie, it centers around a bike club called the Outlaws, a motorcycle club in a suburb of Chicago back in the late 50s, early 60s. And the story itself is fictional, but it's based on an actual book. And they took some of the real people out of there, but then they kind of had to come up with some plot points that weren't in the book. But I will tell you, this is definitely a movie that needs to be seen at the theater. It's so beautifully done. And I don't know that it made me want to ride a motorcycle, but I do just love, you know, how these people were able to just explore and see the beauty of our country. And but yeah, so this is like a club that is started. Its leader's name is Johnny. And the story is told from the perspective of a character named Kathy who, is thrust into this world because she falls in love with Austin Butler's character and named Benny. And so we see kind of the backbone of the movie is her being interviewed by the reporter that actually wrote this book that the story is inspired by. So that's kind of the setup. But this group, they're, for lack of a better word, they're just kind of misfits that never fit in anywhere. They were outcasts. And they found each other and found a community in the biker world. And it started off pretty innocent. I mean, these are hardworking people with families, you know, and as time goes by, there's more people joining the club who aren't so nice. Mm-hmm. And so they get kind of caught up in some crime, organized crime and just, you know, violence, gritty things like that going on. And it, the leader, Johnny, questions his future with this club, and he's trying really hard to recruit Austin Butler's character to kind of take over. And so it's kind of almost a love triangle between the Kathy, Benny, and the motorcycle club.
Yeah.
So, and you see all of the bikers kind of have issues in putting the club first. But I really enjoyed it. I mean, I thought it was very well acted. I really left out of there thinking I don't quite understand why this club had such a pull on them. And so I did a little more research on my own about the real club and came away understanding more about how these guys really were just people that just didn't have a place or felt like they didn't have a place and this was their place. So that made it make sense.
It's become a little bit more like family.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, in addition to Austin Butler, Jodie Comer plays Kathy and she's incredible. She carries this accent through the movie that I'm like, how in the world does she do that? And they say, I just listened to a town hall before I came in here about the movie, interviewing the actors, and they said that the real Kathy, they listened to her audio tapes and that Jodie just nailed it, sounded exactly like her. And then Tom Hardy is in it. And then there's a lot of cameo type roles, smaller roles, mm-hmm. with big actors like Michael Shannon. The director, Jeff Nichols, he and Michael Shannon had worked together a lot. And then Norman Reedus, everybody knows from Walking Dead. He also has a little bitty part in it. He's sort of the comic relief. When I went in, this is rated R, mostly for language and just the grit of the movie. I was expecting it to be a little bit grittier than it was, actually.
Like violence.
Yeah, and there was violence. And if it wasn't just constant, but when they had a fight scene, or, you know, sadly, there's a scene where you see one of the characters get killed on his bike. Those are really graphic and kind of hard to watch. I mean, I had to shut my eyes several times because I just...
They make it too lifelike.
Yeah. Don't really want to see that. But the acting is fantastic.
What'd your husband think?
He loved it. I think he liked it more than I did. So, for the first time, usually I'm in here saying, all right, guys, take one for the team. Take your date to see this. But girls, take one for the team. Take your guy to go see this. I think most of the guys are going to enjoy it. And I thought it was funny. There was a commercial. You know, now they do advertisements ahead of the trailers. Mm-hmm. And there was a commercial for bike insurance. So I thought that was funny. So I feel like a lot of bikers are probably going to mm-hmm. be checking this one out this weekend. But just a fun inside look to a segment of our population that I know nothing about.
I think there's a draw to those period pieces. I mean, and period pieces can be so different, right? Like it's just a different time that's no longer.
Yeah.
That had its own sort of stamp on the way it did things. And I would say the 50s and 60s were definitely that versus the way we, you know, the world looks today or the way we do
things today. Yeah. And I think that's what made it worth going to the theater to see it because it's just really cool to see that era on a big screen.
anything else that can compete with it?
Well, we have, you know, the weekly horror movie.
What? It's so strange to me. What is wrong with people?
I know. This one is called The Exorcism.
Absolutely
or
not.
The Exorcist. I can't remember. It's one or the other.
No.
But it, it's about, it's kind of an interesting plot. It's about an actor who is making a horror movie, and he himself becomes, you know, starts having weird things happen, and he has an addiction problem in his past, and so his daughter thinks that he is back in that lifestyle when, in fact, he's being tormented by, you know, these bad things.
I'm not laughing, but like how terrible it would be for you to be sober and then telling your family, I promise, I'm just possessed. I'm not drunk.
But yeah, The Exorcism is the name of it. And it stars Russell Crowe, who, you know, he's an A-lister. And I think maybe some of his bigger roles are behind him, or as of today, who knows what's coming. But yeah, I mean, he's a good actor, and it's from the same people that brought us the Scream franchise. So there's a lot of promising things about it,
still
if
know.
That's your genre, mm-hmm. I feel like. And it is also rated R. So the two big
reason.
Releases are this movie. So if you want to take the kids, you're going to have to check out Inside Out 2. Garfield is still out there. If is still out there. So several things, you know, for the whole family if you want to take
How's
your kids.
How's Inside Out 2 doing?
It blew everybody out of the water.
Yeah,
it was $154 million last weekend. Bad Boys, which was considered successful, only brought in $33 last weekend. But it's, to date, is already $113 million. But that just shows you how big Inside Out 2 is. And one thing I forgot to mention last week, is some theaters have a re-release of the Lord of the Rings trilogy going on, and it's in the top 10. I mean, that just
because
is
we
so
love
funny.
It.
Yeah. And again, I mean, that's another perfect example of a movie that needs to be seen on the big screen. So if you have younger kids, take them. Let them see it on the big screen.
Rhino had mentioned, or maybe it was you, that eventually, I don't know when it's coming, there's another installment to the franchise, but it's off the weird dude in the well.
Oh, yeah, Gollum.
Yeah, glad you know
yeah.
his name.
Yeah.
But I'm like, his story deserves to be told.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's actually part of the books. I think they are just adding to the franchise. But
going to kind of give him an origin story.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah, I would like to know.
I would go see just about anything once.
Yeah.
with the Lord of the Rings, for sure.
Yeah, but I would definitely want to know why he's so greedy.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Mentioned Crowe. What's his, what'd you say, Russell Crowe?
Russell.
He was the original Gladiator, right?
Yes.
So they're making another Gladiator. Eventually,
oh.
I saw this, and so they. I saw him get interviewed. He has nothing to do with it, but said if they ever asked, that would. I was like, how do you make another Gladiator and you don't have like a cameo?
I know
of Russell Crowe, and it's somewhere like flashback something.
Yeah, I feel like you have to, and like they did it perfectly in the new Mean Girls. They had a small little cameo from Lindsay Lohan, and it was just perfect. So I think that's a great tradition to keep up.
And it would make, yeah, I think so too, because it's going to be hard. It's kind of like, with the fighting one. Now I've lost I'll think about it in a second. I'll let you know. But yes, you shouldn't take classics and then not have the main person at least have a nod sort of to it. I think it ruins it.
Yeah.
All right, lots to see, lots to do. Thank you, Tanya, for your time. You guys stick with us. We got more for you coming up next.
Hello, I'm
Rebecca Turner.
She's smart and pretty.
Good Things with Rebecca Turner continues on Super Talk Mississippi.
I know you want to leave me, but I refuse to let you go. If I have to beg, plead for your
So
Welcome back to Good Things, streaming live over at supertalk.fm. We're also streaming from that Supertalk Mississippi app. Hope you downloaded that. Always on that local Supertalk Mississippi radio station. And don't forget to watch us. That's on your computer, your mobile device. Just head on over to Supertalk TV. Coming up next Tuesday, you got the Ricky Matthews Show and Middays with Gerard Gibbert. They're going to be at the Mississippi Municipal League. Yes. Annual conference in Biloxi. It's, you know, some words are just harder to pronounce for me, Will, than others. And I've been working hard on that. It's an event.
A meeting at the Mississippi Municipal League.
It's like, and it's the two. The Mississippi doesn't help the municipal. And then I just don't know why they don't call it city. Like, it's just like, why do we have to have this big word in there? But it's going to be a good event if you're interested in that. Our coverage is brought to you by Raymond James and Covington County Hospital. Raymond James Public Finances provides innovative solutions to all types of government financing needs to help make communities across our state to have better places to live. That's a good thing. And if you want to learn more, you can go to rjworksformississippi.com. Or with Covington County Hospital, they are where your healthcare matters, and healthcare definitely matters. So go to CovingtonCountyHospital.com. All right, Will, I know you and Carrie also like movies. Have you seen anything lately that you just think's two thumbs up, gotta watch?
On TV, we've seen some things. We haven't been to the movies. I think the last movie we went to go see
you
was
wanted
Doom
to walk
2.
Out of? Oh, no. What was the one that?
Oh, it was that. Oh, gosh. What was that movie with the stupid Argyle?
Gotcha.
Terrible.
Okay, so you saw Dune 2 in the theater. Obviously, I think now you can't do that. You have plenty of time to do it, so
yeah.
It's on you.
You have to watch it at the house.
You have to watch it at the house. Well, do y'all watch? Are y'all ones that will now watch it after already watching it because it's a lot? Like,
yeah,
it's a long one. So, like, you're vested if you're going to turn that on
and
Friday night.
It's good too. I mean, so that helps. Argyle, we will not be watching a second time because it was so terrible. I cannot believe how bad that movie is.
So you didn't get up and leave because you were vested. You had to stick it through?
It got so ridiculous. It's like, just how bad can this get? At that point, it just became so ridiculous.
I was trying to think, like, what's the worst movie I've seen lately? And I would have to say, I could have to stop and sort of think about it. Don't go to very many. I try to hit up the ones. Saw Dune 2. What's his name with the plane? That's Friday.
With the plane.
Tom Cruise with Mission Impossible. Not Mission Impossible. Saw that one too, though. The Top Gun.
Oh, yes.
I was trying, in my mind, it was Mission Impossible and Top Gun all at the same time.
I will say, I'm a fan of the Mission Impossible movies, but I saw the newest one in theaters, mm-hmm. and it was not good.
Why wasn't it good? Because the whole train scene was so realistic that you just knew that...
All of it's real. It's 4 hours long, and they don't have an ending.
Because they want you to...
Part one.
Yes. You knew that going in, though, that it was part one.
I know, but still, you could do it in a better way.
Like, leave it in case you don't make it to part two. You can die knowing that there was some kind of closure there.
Yes.
That's not how it works.
I know, but at the same time...
At least your Marvel movies left you with a little bit of nuggets.
Yeah.
In the credit scenes.
Yeah. This one didn't. It was...
No, it left, but it's going
to
come back, and I'm sure you'll go see.
Another bad movie that I've seen recently.
I would have to stop and, like, think about it, though, but most of them... There have been things I'll start on Netflix, and I get, like, 30 minutes into it, and because you have so many options, I'm like... It's just, I'm not, you know.
Do I want to waste my time on this?
We're not doing this. So we're going to start over and find something else. I did catch, and it was on Prime, the Blue Angels documentary that was in theaters that Tanya encouraged us to go see. Now I am kind of bummed that I didn't go see it on the big because it's all amazing. But I am today years old to realize, like, I grew up, I've seen the Blue Angels. I recognized their significance and that they were out there to bring awareness. And that they were cool. I did not, though, realize, like, it was only 8 that are selected and how, like, prestigious of a selection it is. And then how dangerous. Like, I get that, like, anytime you're flying a plane at that kind of speeds and trying to do tricks, there's going to be a level of danger. I just didn't realize how far they push the boundaries with it, like, mm-hmm. you know, within their shows. And then the documentary really walks you through them shifting classes of pilots, picking those pilots, and then how they walk through the year. If you're into that, like into aviation or just into sort of the behind the scenes kind of thing and find that kind of stuff interesting, it's a great watch. Like, it's a good family friendly watch, but it's really cool. You'll leave with much more respect for the Blue Angels, their commitment to the call to be a Blue Angel, and then their commitment to every time they go up and do their show because of how dangerous. And they tighten in their thingy needles every time they go out, yeah. Till they get to their upside down one, whatever it's called. And I'm like, you know, the crowd would probably have clapped for you with something a lot less dangerous. You didn't. But thank you for being that, you know, sort of that cool.
We watched last night on Netflix, Tell Them You Love Me. Have you heard about that?
I've heard.
It's not family friendly.
Well, good things is, and hopefully Sports Talk will be, but you never know. And that's from 3 to 6 coming up next. Rhino and I will meet you back here Monday at 2. But until then, I hope you all find time for the good things.
Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.